Well, how about that? You open up ACC play with a big win on the road. Syracuse takes down Florida State in comeback fashion. We'll dive into the win. We'll get into what's happening with the defense, some of the changes in the second half, and also play a little bit of overreaction, underreaction, neutral reaction game. What's going on? What are we thinking about some of the big components of that victory against Florida State? We're going to talk about all that and more coming up on the Locked On Syracuse podcast.
You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome in. This is the Locked On Syracuse podcast. I'm Tyler Aki with Tim Leonard. We're with you guys every single weekday here on the show. Check us out on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. And today's episode is brought to you by Sonos. Sonos is the official sponsor of ESPN College Football. Go to Sonos.com to learn more. Thank you for making us your first listen every single day. We're free and available on all platforms. That includes YouTube. Also find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, all that good stuff. And why wouldn't you make us your first listen every single day after that?
Final Florida Four, State baby. Win. Back on.
The Final Four is back on. The juices are flowing. We're pumped up with Cuse juice right now. But let's be honest here. Like, we have talked about this team ad nauseum. They've got this roller coaster potential, the highest of highs, the lowest of lows. But this was a great win for this team. When you look at what they did, where they did it, and just the overall implications of this, we talked about this. This was a very important stretch for Syracuse. What did we say during this next, what was it, five-game stretch for the Orange now? When you look at Villanova, Georgetown, Lehigh, Cornell, and then the two games in the rear view now of Indiana and Florida State, we said you had to go, 4-2 during that stretch? And right now you've got two wins, and they're two of the three games that probably we predicted a loss for.
Right. No, I mean, they picked off one they shouldn't have, to put it simply. That was a quad
win. Might be two in a
row.
Two in a row that maybe you shouldn't have.
Well, two in a row that you were underdogs in, according to Vegas, if you want to go off that. And according to betonline.ag, they definitely, I think, had a better chance going in of beating an Indiana team because it was at home. But to go down to the Tuck, win a game where Florida State has won 25 straight conference games. Yep. Also, it's a conference win. Now you're 1-0 in league play. It's been a weird first weekend of the ACC. I don't really love how they do this now, but you took advantage of a Florida State team that I think is still trying to figure out what they are. But also, Syracuse did some things in this game and won in a way that I wasn't necessarily sure they could win, the way that they were breaking people down one-on-one, getting some switches on offense in the second half, using their playmakers on offense, and the way that they were defending the three-point line. Now, how much of that was Florida State just having an off shooting night, we can get into, but they held Florida State to whatever it was, 4-for-30 from three.
Yeah,
I didn't necessarily know that defense going into that matchup could do that.
Yeah, and listen, Syracuse didn't shoot the ball great on their side, but and we kind of talk about this with the football team too, how if you keep it low scoring, you're going to be in the games. This offense is so good that if for some reason it's low scoring, you're always going to be in that game because you never know when that switch is going to flip in the second half. Syracuse ends the game in this one shooting 30% from three, 39% from two, but that first half shooting percentage was what, 13%?
I mean, they started the game 4-for-29. I know that when they were down 23-12, they were 4-for-29, which they maybe should have been down more at that point.
Right.
Florida State wasn't shooting it great either.
And I tweeted it out like, okay, you're shooting at what, like a 18% clip right now from the field, but you're only down eight. Is that a good thing? And I think, yeah, that's a good thing. If you're only down eight and you're putting together probably your worst shooting performance of the season, and who knows, it might end up being the worst shooting performance of the season for a half at least that this team will have. But if you can get into some of these rock fights, I do like your chances because you're going to be able to turn it on offensively. It's just, I didn't think this was a Syracuse team that was capable of holding any Power 5 opponent to 60 points or less.
Yeah, it was interesting because I felt like the first half was more an offensive struggle than a defensive battle. Like, they were both getting good looks, Syracuse included. Cole Swider was getting a lot of open looks in the first half, wasn't going down. It was mostly just Gerard making some logo threes.
Oh, boy. And Logo Joe. I'm glad we kind of claimed that. Logo Joe. That's a great nickname.
He made some big shots in this game for a guy that's just trying to make his way onto the Siena roster. It definitely came through in the clutch. But Cole then turns it around and comes through with some huge shots in the second half as well. And there were two or three Swider threes that were just very timely.
Very timely.
Yeah, 52-42 was one. And then there was one right after Caleb Mills hit a three that, watching back the game, it hit me how big of a shot it was, because it put Syracuse back up by 9, I believe, with like 5 or 6 minutes left. And that was enough of a cushion. But I got to say, credit Jim Boeheim and really the entire Syracuse coaching staff, because they went into the game, they targeted some mismatches. They understood that Florida State was going to switch on everything. And when I watched back the game, so much of what they did offensively in the second half was just getting those mismatches and going to work. Yeah. And Boeheim talked about that post game, but Jimmy going up against Wyatt Wilkes on a couple possessions, taking him to school. And then Jesse Edwards getting switched onto a guard and Joe Girard finding him, Symer Torrence finding him down low. Florida State, I think that came back to bite them. I don't think they have quite as switchable of a team as they have had in years past. And it was encouraging that Syracuse could kind of exploit those one-on-one matchups.
Here's why you have to switch on Syracuse too. When you've got, for the most part, in most lineups, four guys out there that can shoot from distance, you have to switch. You have to live with the height mismatch you'll have and make these guys shoot over you, but you can't give them space. You'd rather give them a couple inches of height than a couple inches of space to get that shot off of. And I know, like, we saw Cole miss a couple of open ones here, but eventually those shots go in. Shooters are going to make those shots if you give them the space. Doesn't matter where they are on the floor. I mean, just look at some of the shots that Joe Girard took. It felt like he took 5 shots of 30-plus feet in this game. So those are the types of things that this offense can create. They can create those mismatches, and then eventually things just kind of catch up with you. You can get into the rhythm, and then you can go on some of these runs that we've seen Syracuse put together so far this season.
It also minimized Florida State's rebounding and height advantage, because I don't think Leonard Hamilton felt good enough to put a Wyatt Wilkes out there. Even John Butler at times kind of got switched onto and got spliced up by Buddy. And Buddy wasn't great in this game, but he was being defended really tight. Really, the main takeaway from this is that the other guy stepped up when Buddy was not able to get going. And I think it was mostly because the officiating was so, like, loose in this game, I guess is the way you describe it. There were so many fouls that I thought just weren't called on Buddy throughout the game.
And there's going to be games like this, like, and it may not be in this exact fashion, but there's going to be games where Buddy is missing, right? This isn't necessarily one of those games. Like, sure, did Buddy miss shots? Yeah, he ended up going 3 for 10 in this game and 0 for 4 from 3. But at the end of the day, it was more of, okay, this is the way that I kind of saw this. Florida State said, we're going to take your best player away. We're going to throw the kitchen sink at Buddy Boeheim. You other four guys on the floor, you're going to have to be the ones that beat us today. And they were. And they deserve a ton of credit. Cole, Jimmy, Joe, Jesse, all those guys deserve a ton of credit for how they put together a nice team performance.
Yeah, and, you know, Boeheim gets a lot of flack sometimes for his lack of an offensive game plan, lack of set plays, all that. But one thing that Syracuse has always been good at is getting those switches, getting those mismatches, identifying them. And they did a terrific job of that in this game. Now, it's going to be interesting because we'll preview Villanova on the podcast tomorrow. But Villanova is the same way. They switch on everything. And that's part of the reason why Cole Swider struggled with their defense. So now it becomes, all right, can you do this against Villanova as well? I think Villanova has more switchable guys than Florida State, because Villanova doesn't play anyone more than 6'8", really. And Florida State, where Syracuse exploited them, was when Jimmy got switched onto the bigs, when Joe Girard got switched onto a big, those type of matchups.
Right. And I look at it too, like, Jesse Edwards did a really good job of sort of exploiting that. I know he only had 11 points. We're used to seeing the 17 point, 12
first
rebound
double
efforts.
Double, though. But yeah, the rebounding.
He did have the, but here's the important stat to me, is the 5 offensive rebounds he had, because he created a number of second chance opportunities for this team that really allowed them to get that extra 3-pointer in the possession and get those extra shots that ultimately, in a 3-point game, those are the things that really make a difference at the end.
No doubt. I think Jesse, I mean, he did foul out, which is disappointing.
Again,
you could see how he was so heartbroken on that 5th foul. You can tell he's really working on it.
He knew it was stupid. He knew it was stupid. He knew it was something that he shouldn't have bid on.
And he just jumps on every pump fake right now, which is a little disappointing, but he's making an impact. He's blocking shots. He's doing so many good things offensively that you can't get too mad at him in this game. Just the way the game ended, there were a couple interesting plays after he fouled out. I mean, the turnover by Swider was tough, but then he makes a couple big free throws down the stretch. The other thing is Syracuse clearly, again, tries to foul on the three. And thank God Caleb Mills misses a good open look. But if that goes down, then I can't even imagine how much we're talking about why the refs didn't call that on today's podcast if they end up losing. Because this is now, what, two times this season Syracuse has tried that? Even a couple times at the end of the half, refs just aren't calling that as much this year, it feels like.
Which is weird because it's a clear intentional foul. And I think the way that refs are supposed to view it is if there is intent to foul and there's enough contact, like that should be an instant whistle. I was at a bar watching this game, and God bless the guy who, amid all the college football frenzy that was going on during this game, allowed the one TV to get switched over to ACC Network. I wasn't even sure they were going to have ACC Network here, but in the middle of the Midwest, you never know which places have it, which places don't. But I was lucky enough to be at the right place. I didn't get totally stiff-armed at my request either. The whole time I'm saying, you got to foul. You're up three. Like, you got to foul here. And thank God, like, you're right. Thank God that didn't go in, or otherwise we'd be maybe having a totally different conversation today.
Yeah, and it's funny watching back, because even when the shot misses at the end, Swider turns to the ref and puts his hands up like he's celebrating, but he's half like, gosh, how much more do you want me to do there? The only time we've gotten it is when Indiana, it backfired and they got the offensive rebound. But also, Joe went up to the ref, I remember, before that play and sort of clarified that they were going to foul. I don't know if we have to do that more or what it is, but it's frustrating that that was so blatantly them trying to foul, and that's the right play in those situations mathematically.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get into the defense, because here we go. That new little twist to the 2-3 zone is out again. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But all right, college football fanatics, have you heard about Prize Picks? Because it is daily fantasy made easy. Tim and I love it, and we know that you will too. They're the leader in college sports daily fantasy, offering more football props than anyone in the world, including all the stars of the Power Five, as well as mid-major players you may not have even heard of. They offer props on anything that you can think of, from yardage to touchdowns, even interceptions thrown. And all users that deposit and use our promo code LOCKEDON will receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. You pick 2 to 5 players, over under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. You can even mix sports as well, whether you got a little NBA kick with a little college basketball, something of that nature. You can do that on Prize Picks. So use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy, and they offer safe and fast withdrawals. So don't hesitate. Check out prizepicks.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON or go to your App Store and download the app today. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. All right, so diving into the change in the defense here, the shift to the 1-1-3, the 1-3-1, whatever you want to call it.
Can we come up with just a, what are we calling it? Because Boeheim calls it a 1-1-3, but I disagree.
Let's call it the Boeheim twist, all right? Like, that's what this is, the Boeheim twist here. Because at the end of the day, it gives you something different. It's a different look. It's a different everything about it, it just seems so counter to what Boeheim has been. Like, let's be honest, he's been pretty stubborn with what his defense has been. And let's be honest, it's worked for most of the time. But this just happens to be his worst defensive team of all time. So he's trying to find different ways, and he deserves a ton of credit for shying away from, or I shouldn't say shying away, but being flexible, being malleable, being open to having some sort of switch in here to move to this 1-1-3, this 1-3-1, whatever the hell we want to call it. Whatever it is, it's giving teams a different look, and it's frustrating the hell out of them.
Yeah, I think every year they always have like one change that leads to a little bit of a run, but it's usually something a little more nuanced, like the forwards are playing a little higher up, or something that's not as noticeable, as drastic as
a little
this.
Bit more of a and, press from time to time.
Yeah, it's maybe you work on the trapping or you change one or two things there, but it seems like, I guess the reason why he's calling it a 1-1-3 is because Buddy is still sort of working in tandem with Joe when it is at that high post area. But when you freeze it, when someone's, you know, crossing half court on offense, it seems like it's basically Buddy in line with the two forwards. So 1-3-1 is what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's working. And it definitely seems to be just preventing passes from getting to the high post, which was the biggest issue in the first five, whatever games it was, until they made this move against Indiana. Now, when teams aren't getting it to the high post as much, they're just chucking threes. And in the case of Florida State, they were on paper a pretty good three-point shooting team. They're at home and all that, but they could not make a thing from three.
Yeah, 4 for 30 from three in this game. The best part about this, you can still wear the We Will Zone You shirts, all that stuff, because it's still a zone. And I think this is the interesting part is, all right, what are going to be some of these other changes? Because guess what? Eventually, teams are going to find ways, and now that there's some more film on this 1-1-3, 1-3-1, whatever,
sure.
Whatever it is, all right, the Boeheim twist, whatever it is, there's going to be film on it. Coaches are going to dig up ways. I mean, even Mike Woodson found ways to flip the switch on it in the second half of that Indiana game, and they found a lot more success with it. There's going to be teams that find success with it. I'm interested to see what's that next iteration. What's that next little tweak that Boeheim makes the rest of the way? Because this is extremely fascinating to me to see the way that the defense has kind of shifted, changed, and it just looks like a more energized, invigorated group out there that's running this thing now.
And I got to say, credit to Buddy, because I don't think he gets enough credit for his defense, or at least his 2-3 zone acumen, or maybe 1-3-1 zone acumen in this case, the way that he's able to adjust. Boeheim talked about how sometimes he's on the fly getting out of the 1-3-1 when a certain situation comes out on the court. And Saimir also was playing in that high post spot. And Buddy played the forward some in this game when Saimir was there. Like, he's flying around. There was one play he played center in a critical possession when it was 61-55 after the Joe 3. Jimmy just forgot that he was the center and they didn't have a center in there. So Jimmy's playing forward and Buddy just steps back and plays center on the possession. That's at least, I mean, he might not be the most athletic defender, but he's definitely one of the smarter defenders on the team. And I guess there's jokes to be made there. There's a reason why he knows the 2-3 zone pretty well.
Right. And again, you kind of brought it up. It's just his flexibility with all the different positions. He was on the back line for a good portion of this game. And even when you have a guy like Saimir who only plays 12 minutes, you only have one other guy who's really at that top portion of the zone. But I think you do have a lot of switchable pieces on this zone that, okay, maybe you can have a guy come up and play at the top. Maybe you can drop Buddy back. There's all these different pieces to it where, okay, maybe the skill level defensively is pretty low on this team, but if you can mask some of these deficiencies, and it looks like Jim is starting to do a pretty good job of that right now over this last two-game stretch. I know it may be tough to say that in an Indiana game where he let up 110 points in double overtime, but just to see a different sort of defense in that first half and really for the duration of this Florida State game, it's promising. It's certainly promising. And we'll get to overreactions in a little bit, and we're going to talk about the defense and whether or not they're turning the corner now, but this is an important little landmark of the season to see that this defense is at least evolving to some sort of degree here.
You won a game in ACC play on the road and you scored 63 points. That's something we didn't know that you could do. And I think it's a large part that they're not strictly playing this defense, and Florida State missed some shots, but this wrinkle has really helped them in the past two games here. And also, while we're talking about Torrence a little bit, I'd be remiss if we didn't shout him out, because I didn't think he was really good in this game. Did some little things really nicely. He just keeps the ball moving, and he's got like some hot potato quick passes where he just kind of knows where to get the ball, has a good feel for the offense, good vision. He never, ever finishes at the rim, which is his next step. And it's honestly baffling. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can't remember once he's like gotten into contact and finished at the rim this year. But he's doing some really good things in terms of breaking the press, solid defense. He's really helping out this team.
Here's what Saimir Torrence is. He's a rewatch guy. When you go back and watch the game, like when you're watching it the first time, you're not going to pick up on a lot of things that he does well. But when you go back and rewatch the game, and I think a position like this where this really behooves the rewatch guys is if you go back and watch a football game and watch some things that tight ends do in football games, it's kind of what you're seeing with Saimir Torrence here. You go back and rewatch the game, you see some of these things. Whereas in real time, you're watching it and you're like, well, there's another botched layup at the rim by Saimir Torrence, but he pushes the pace. And he does some little things really well. He was out there for, what was he out there for, 12 minutes in this game, and he had 5 assists, only turned the ball over once. It's good to see that sort of performance out of him. The turnovers have been a problem with him for a good portion of the season, but this is one of those games where the pieces are starting to kind of find their way together here, and that's a good thing for him.
Yeah, his turnover rate's at a 27 right now. Gerard's at 25 on KenPom. So that's both a little bit higher than you'd want, but at least they're trending in the right direction. And then just looking up his numbers, because I mentioned it, he's 5 for 20 from 2 this year, 1 for 3 from 3. But again, I don't really care. Like, he's at least getting in the lane.
He's got 4 other guys. If Jesse's going to score like Jesse's scoring, you don't need Samir. Like, I would have said you don't need Samir with just the 3 guys that you envisioned would be scorers for this team, and Cole, Buddy, and Joe. But now that Jesse's...
And Jimmy,
Jimmy. Yeah. I really should include Jimmy in that conversation as well. With the way that those 4 guys are scoring, and now you're adding Jesse into that fold, you've got 5 legitimate scorers on this team. I mean, Samir, I'm cool with him not taking a shot every single game. Now, would I like to see him start to finish those layups? Yeah, absolutely. It's just another weapon, but he doesn't need to. It's just, I don't know if he needs to be the one taking those sort of shots.
It's just a shame that the one guy that can get to the rim is the guy that can't make the layups when he gets there. I mean, I'm sure other guys have gotten to the rim a decent amount as well. But in general, he's the one that's getting there at a higher percentage than most.
All right, we will play a little game of overreaction or not coming up in a little bit. We're going to get into some of the elements of this game and how they will translate moving forward, including the defense. We will do that in just a second. But first, Bet Online has you covered all season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football season continues their march to the playoffs. Bet Online remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. So head on over to their new updated desktop or mobile site to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All you got to do is punch in our promo code Locked On and you will receive that bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Tim and I do it. We give it to you on the preview shows every single day. We'll do it tomorrow for the Villanova game. BetOnline is where the game starts.
This holiday season, guys, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Even better than a candy bar, it's a Built Bar. It's filled with so much holiday goodness, rich with flavor, covered in chocolate, but amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat, and also high in protein. You get the best of both worlds, delicious and healthy. So many flavors to choose from for Built Bar, you'll have a hard time choosing. Will you go with raspberry or mint brownie, cherry or double chocolate, cookies and cream or peanut butter brownie? There's tons of delicious options. Built Bar gives you that extra fuel you need to bust down those mall doors and battle all the holiday shoppers. Because it's the season of peace and love, don't bring up your favorite Built Bar flavor at family parties, because people are very passionate about their favorite flavors. They'll fight for it, and things could get out of hand on that front. So cozy up with something warm, have a holiday secret, dip into your Built Bar into a piping hot cup of cocoa as well. There's tons of fun flavors out there. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Again, built.com is the website, promo code LOCKED15 at built.com.
All right, let's dive into some of the early takeaways from what we saw in this game. I think there's a couple. Let's just start with an ACC one here, okay? Because Syracuse goes out 1-0 in the ACC, first place in the conference. Stop the count while we're at it right now. Mm-hmm. But Syracuse can finish as a top 5 team in the ACC right now. Is that an overreaction or not for you?
Well, I mean, they can. I still would pick that they won't. And it's tough because the ACC just doesn't look good. It was a really odd first weekend. Virginia Tech loses to Wake at home. Notre Dame loses at BC. It felt like a lot of underdogs stepping up. But when you look at the math right now and look at some of these sites that sort of track this, KenPom has Syracuse ranked as the 9th highest ACC team. Bart Torvik has Syracuse ranked as the 8th highest. I don't know who the 4 teams are, or the 5 teams are that are going to end up being better than Syracuse, because after Duke, it's just a whole lot of right now. Like, even Louisville, UNC, they're not looking that impressive, but I would still put them in a tier probably above Syracuse right now. I get that a lot of fans will make the argument that they could finish top 5. It's just, they haven't done it. And I think for all these good wins that we're going to see, like the win at Florida State, there's going to be some bad losses in there as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction, but no. I also don't think it's a testament to Syracuse. I do think it's just this conference in the middle is going to be a giant blob of meh. And hey, to go out and get that first win on the road against Florida State, I mean, that Florida State game, when you look through Syracuse's ACC schedule, probably one of the three toughest games they'll play this season in the conference. Yeah, and to go out and pick that up as a win right out of the gate, I mean, that puts you in a good spot. And I know that sounds weird to say in game number one of the conference slate, but I think you're going to see a bunch of teams that are all sort of knotted up there at the end or hovering around the 500 mark of the conference. And this could be the game. And who knows, this could be a big tiebreaker game for you when it all comes down to it at the end. So I don't think it's an overreaction, but I also wouldn't say that it's necessarily a testament to Syracuse. I'd say it's more of a reflection of the conference as a whole.
That's a good way of putting it. I think there's going to be maybe five or six teams that make the tournament from the ACC this year. And I think Syracuse has a decent shot at being one of those teams. So I would say they're pretty close to being top five this year. I just don't want people to think that means their regular season is going to be drastically better than it has been.
Yeah. One of the big reasons why Syracuse will either finish top five or outside the top five is the defense. And for us, let's answer this question right now. Overreaction or not, the defense has turned a corner with this new innovation that it's currently going through right now.
It's tough to say because I feel like Villanova is the true test now, where it's one of the best passing teams in the country. It's one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. I do think they've done some really good stuff in terms of preventing the high post pass, but how sustainable is it? How long is it before teams figure that out? And the other thing is here, Florida State did get some open looks. They just missed tons of open threes in this game, as did Syracuse. And teams are going to miss. There's going to be games where teams just don't shoot well from three. And actually, Syracuse has probably been on the bad end of that luck so far with teams like VCU knocking down shots. But
Colgate.
Yeah, teams are going to shoot above 30 every game because they're open. It's just how many are they going to make? And I venture to say right now that the outlier so far has been Florida State not making a ton. And until I see more of those type of games, then it's hard for me to say they've turned a corner.
I think you hit it on the head by saying Villanova is the real telling point because, like you mentioned, good three-point shooting team, moves the ball well, but how about this? Hall of Fame coach who's now seen two games on tape of what this new iteration of the zone looks like a little bit. So how will Jay Wright counter that? Listen, if they go out and hold Villanova to 70 points, then we can really start having the conversation of have they turned the corner. But I'm hesitant to get there right now, but it's certainly a step in the right direction right now. But let's slow the brakes on, okay, have they turned the corner defensively? Because at the end of the day, Mike Woodson made a halftime adjustment and poured it on in that second half against you too. So, all right, last one here. And in a game where there was so much good, so much to like, there is this little wrinkle that we do have to talk about. And it is elephant. Benny Williams. Yes, the five-star elephant in the room, if you will. It is Benny Williams. Only played 2 minutes in this game. And there was the one sequence when he did get pulled from the game where Jim Boeheim just chewed his ass out. And you could see it was a pretty frustrated Benny Williams. Now, I know some people have been tweeting us stuff about will he transfer? Is he ready? All this stuff. I saw someone, and this is, I think, a dangerous game to play here. The screenshot. Someone sent us a screenshot of Benny looking disgruntled on the bench. First of all, it was like a fully zoomed out, like full court, all 22 level sort of screenshot that you're looking at when you see it. But I'm not going to take a screenshot from a moment frozen in time and let that be gospel for how Benny felt for that game. But are you worried about Benny? Is this the game where, okay, this might be, we talked about fork in the road after getting bull rushed on that free throw for Benny Williams. Did he take the turn towards the wrong path that you don't want him to go down?
I think he's just not, and he hasn't been playing well. And I don't know if I mean, I'm worried. Yes, that's the short answer to your question, but I don't blame Boeheim one bit. Like some people are tweeting at us that Boeheim's at fault here. Boeheim, maybe was a little harsh on him in the post game, but he said something like, he's not giving us much right now. That's true. I want him to be better. Trust me. I want to believe that Boeheim is wrong there, but when he's not good right now and it's an ACC game on the road, I'm totally fine with Benny not playing because he's just not attacking the rim whatsoever. All his shots are coming from outside 10 feet. And he's a guy that if he does put his mind to it, can get to the rim. And that's what he needs to do because he can't hit a shot right now. And that looks ugly when he's shooting threes.
Yeah, I was going to say he took the 1-3 in this game pretty open and it didn't inspire a lot of confidence.
It's not good. No.
And listen, it'd be one thing if Jimmy were struggling right now and he wasn't acclimating to the power five, but he is. And let's be honest.
But it's the defense with Benny that it's like, gosh, if we had that guy untapped on D, then it's a difference maker, right?
Right. But it's like, okay, the competition for the spot is Jimmy versus Benny. From what you've seen so far, it is no competition. Jimmy is clearly the better player out there on the floor right now and has helped contribute to Syracuse winning a lot more than Benny Williams has. I know the minute sample is a lot bigger with Jimmy, but I really like what I've seen from Jimmy in the early going. I think if you go through all the different surprises from this season, I think Jimmy's the number two biggest surprise from what you've seen out of Syracuse so far this season. Right behind Jesse
Edwards.
The only
thing I'd say to that is that I'd rather have Jimmy Boeheim playing 30 minutes and being fresh at the end than playing 37, 38 minutes because Benny's not giving you anything. And there was even one play at the end of the game where Jimmy, I don't know if he didn't understand that he was the center or not, but he's trying to race back and try and block a shot and just was out of position and Florida State scored in transition. And then, I don't know, Jimmy inbounding the ball late in the game has given me some quivers as well.
I think he trusts his brother a little too much. You kind of
got to learn that he can run when a made basket, like he can run the baseline. He's not doing that enough. So, yeah. I mean, Jimmy's been good. Don't get me wrong, but Benny still does some stuff that on paper, if you tap into it, he could really help out this team. I will also say it's not uncommon for him to be struggling like this. I know he's a five-star or almost a five-star, whatever, but it's a freshman in a tough defensive system to learn, regardless of what Boeheim says.
That's already throwing new different angles to it right now with this 1-1-3. Not only is he getting the textbook, he's getting the textbook and some supplemental reading material as well.
Right. And I think actually the bigger issue is just his offense and his, like he just looks sort of hesitant to do anything on offense. He doesn't seem like he's letting the game come to him at all. He's forcing it or he's, you know, not aggressive enough and pulling up. It's just very out of rhythm, out of sync right now. But the frustrating thing is now in this transfer portal era, it does get into the conversation of, all right, is he going to walk when this is common as a freshman back in the mid 2000s here, 2005, 2006, we wouldn't be that
2015,
worried.
2015, even then, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Right, like, look at Jesse. He's developed into a great player in, I believe, his third year now, if I have that right. Mm-hmm. And I can't even keep track with all the redshirt and stuff, but I think this is his third year basically playing, and he's developed, and it feels like he's a dying breed of someone that's stuck it out for 2 years, quote-unquote. Yeah. But more kids should do that. The transfer stuff is not leading results for most players anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll pull the midseason transfer. I don't think it's going to get to that point. But at the end of the year, it's certainly a can of worms that will definitely be looked at because it is one of the more viable options for a lot of these kids nowadays. But I think the frustrating part to me is that from when you look at this game from a score standpoint, and yes, there were a ton of missed open shots in this game. It wasn't a beauty of an offensive game. It was maybe a little bit of an offensive struggle more so than a defensive battle. But when you look at the score of this game and you know that you need defense to win a game like this, if I told you 63-60 is the score, I would have guessed Benny Williams would have played a fair number of minutes in that game.
Yeah. And that was something Corey Alexander, the color commentator for the game, was really harping on is they need to play more of Anselm, more of Torrance, more of Benny to improve the defense. And he was hitting on in the first half how they were playing well with that defensive lineup out there. But it's just not going to happen. Boeheim's not going to – he's going to keep riding those five in the second halves. And Torrance will play some here or there. Anselm will play some here or there. And he's going to play seven guys, just like Villanova is going to play six or seven tomorrow night or Tuesday. It is what it is. The unfortunate thing is Benny might transfer because he's not playing, and that's just the nature of college basketball now, and we could really use him next year. So it becomes a balancing act. How much is Boeheim going to weigh? Yeah, it's tougher for us to win games with Benny in there and struggling right now versus, when the Boeheims leave next year and we don't have any scoring, we could really use a sophomore Benny Williams that's coming into his own in his sophomore season, because they might be bad next year if he's not there.
And I mean, even like, you'd love to have an eighth guy this year too.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you'd love to have Jimmy only play 30 minutes because you're getting a solid 15 to 20 out of Benny every single game, but he played two in this game. And hopefully this isn't a sign of things to come. Again, this is still very early in the season for him, but it's certainly something that's worth monitoring going forward. All right. That is going to do it for us on today's show. We will be back tomorrow. Full Villanova preview. Going to tape it before I get on out of here from Chicago.
Yeah.
Go to New York. I'm super excited. We'll get into all my thoughts on going to the Garden and just the momentum with the program right now as they head into a big matchup with one of the best teams in the country. So we will do that on tomorrow's show. For Tim, I'm Tyler. We will talk to you guys on Tuesday.